This is a Momentum Media production.
Nerd alert!
Property Nerds, the home for data-driven property investors, where we uncover Australia's hot and cold markets, latest headlines and trends.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Property Nerds podcast. This is your co-host, Lee Paliwal, Director of Hills Finance. And today I'll be taking the limelight and taking over the podcast, where I'll also be introducing a very special guest. But firstly, before we dive into that, I would like to share some very amazing news that InvestiKit has won Real Estate Business Award last week as Buyer's Agency of the Year for 2024. So I want to give a big hand to the team at InvestiKit and obviously Arjun. And yeah, this is actually a first time in Australia that a company has won Buyer's Agency of the Year back to back for two consecutive years. So super proud of the team at InvestiKit and great to see their hard work towards assisting Australian property investors being recognized yet again. So with that being said, if you are looking to take your property portfolio to new heights, you can learn more from consultation with the InvestiKit team by reaching out to them on their website, which is investikit.com.au, and booking a free call. So now for today's podcast, I would like to introduce our special guest today, and he's a great talent, think straight-talking, pommy, Gordon Ramsay type who loves the real estate industry and is passionate about auctioneering and helping people navigate the often nerve-wracking experience of buying a property. With his extensive experience in auctioneering, sales, training and business development, he brings a wealth of knowledge and insights into the real estate market. And I think our audience today is really going to enjoy this. So today we have Andy Reid, Australia's number one auctioneer, with us. Welcome to the Property Nerds, Andy.
How are you? How are you doing?
Very, very well today. And awesome. Very excited to dive into our topic with yourself. So we're going to pick your brain. So for today's topic, Andy, essentially, I want to get some insider tips from you for property buyers and how property buyers can secure a good deal at auctions. And I guess some practical strategies and tactics to navigate the competitive bidding process successfully. Yeah. So firstly, Andy, could you take us back through your journey of becoming an auctioneer?
Yes. So I got thrust into real estate sales in 2010. And then my then father-in-law actually took me aside one time and said, Andy, I've booked an auction for you. And I thought I was running the campaign. This was in 2012. And he looks at me, gone out. He looks at me like, you don't quite understand what I'm saying here, do you? And I went, oh, what is there to understand? And he goes, no, you're calling the auction, Andy, in 2 weeks. I went, oh, okay, no, all right. I did not see that one coming. And he just had this knack, right? Bless him, because he's not with us anymore. And he had this knack of recognizing when someone was going to be good at something and then just throwing it at them. And so he threw this first auction at me with 2 weeks' notice. I'll never forget, 4 Sharp Street, Cranmer, Victoria. It was a weatherboard house riddled with asbestos and didn't have a back. Like the actual back of the house was missing.
Oh my goodness.
So it was
just open,
it was
wide open.
Yeah. It was an absolute mansion, as I'm sure you can expect. And so it was basically land value minus the asbestos removal and whatnot. And it went bananas and it was amazing. I made 2 massive errors during the call as well. But it was just an addiction that I've just been loving ever since, to be honest.
Amazing. And I guess obviously, you've probably seen it all with, you know, I guess from a high level, what highlights the differences between a good and a bad auctioneer?
Focus on the craft is one of the primary things, right? So I think archaically, it was thought that any salesperson could be an auctioneer. The skill sets from being a salesperson to being an auctioneer to being a buyer agent to being a financier to being whatever is so different. It is so incredibly different. It's a completely different skill set. And the problem is a lot of sales agents still feel that they can just turn into an auctioneer without putting any effort in. Like I know the amount of hours that I've put in, it's thousands and thousands of hours of practice that I've put in to get to the point where I'm at. And even though in Melbourne, I call more auctions than most, than the vast majority of auctioneers in town, I'll be the one that's probably practiced more than anyone else on a weekly basis, even now. So you say that I've seen it all, and you can think that you've seen it all, but when you've got 8 billion humans on the planet and they're all wired differently, you can never know it all. And that's the part of the beauty of what I do, is that it doesn't matter how many you've done, you're still going to get a curveball every week. And it's so much fun to be kept on your toes by your job that constantly. It keeps it fun. It keeps it interesting the whole time. It's the best gig. I feel so lucky that I found it, to be honest, or it found me.
Yeah. And I guess there's definitely got to be a knack of drawing the attention in from the whole room, or, you know, the whole people and communication, bringing people to decisions as well. A lot of emotions involved.
Of course. I mean, public speaking, first and foremost, yes. And that's something that we'll come on to in a bit when it comes to how buyers can help themselves a little bit, actually. The whole concept of public speaking, I think, is something that people don't realize. When they're in the industry and then they become an auctioneer, that's the first thing that whacks them around substantially. Mm-hmm. And I think one thing that a lot of people need to do if they want to become an auctioneer is they need to go do some public speaking courses first off, because the skill of public speaking, in terms of that, like you said, that engagement, building an energy, maintaining an energy, but actually understanding and being able to comprehend the energy and knowing what you need to do, whether you need to shove a rocket up it or whether you need to calm it down, or all those sorts of human dynamics that are at play beyond the transaction, are real key defining factors as to what makes a property go from, say, $1 million to 1,050,000 or 1,070,000 or 1.1 something, 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 right? And so the transaction is one component, but then there's a whole bunch of stuff that goes beyond it, which is to do with humans. It's got nothing to do with the transaction as such. The consequences, exactly, of either understanding it or not, play a huge part in where that end result lies.
Big time. I've seen a lot of emotions at auctions involved, and there's definitely a lot of emotional intelligence involved in your role as well, reading the room and the people, right?
No, there is. And honestly, I think this is where I need to thank my parents, because my parents were both police officers. So they taught me from a really young age to understand what's being said on the playground without actually listening to the words that are coming out of people's mouths. So being able to read and understand what's going on in a dynamic. And it was actually from, back when I was actually getting bullied. Yeah, I got bullied quite badly when I was young. I was sort of 8, 7, 8, 9 years old. And they were teaching me how to understand the dynamics of what's going on so that you can, in advance, extricate yourself from potentially damaging situations. And from there, it just sort of grew, through a hospitality game and, understanding human behaviors, particularly when under the influence. And now I find myself here.
Fantastic. So, Andy, could you take us through some tips as to how buyers could secure good deals at auction?
Fail to prepare, prepare to fail, right? That's probably one of the biggest ones. If you really want to put yourself in the best position to take advantage of what's going on in the marketplace or at the coalface of an auction, all the work has to be done beforehand. You can't just rock up and magically make things happen. And what I mean by preparation is it's not just hitting Google or realestate.com or domain or whichever website you're looking on for your information, or even like the likes of RP Data, right? There's no point just looking on the internet. That's only part of the game. You've got to get out into auction land. You've got to get out on a few Saturdays, have a look at the dynamics of what's going on, familiarize yourself with what's going on as well, because as I'm sure, Lee, like, humans act very differently when put under pressure. And if you can familiarize yourself with the energy that's in the environment and the dynamics at play, even if like the really astute people that are out there trying to do well is if they see a property that's coming on in say 3 weeks time, a really cool thing to do is to find out who's going to call the auction and actually go do some homework on that auctioneer as well, because each auctioneer's got, I mean, look, there's a load of auctioneers that run to a set plan. But there are some, I like to think that I'm one of these guys, that have got different things, different little nuances, different little tells, different little ways of maneuvering through a particular situation. And if you can get to know the auctioneers and how they operate, then it's almost like counting cards in a casino. You can sort of predict what's likely to happen. And if you can predict what's likely to happen with a greater degree of accuracy, you can get yourself ahead of the game and be able to act accordingly. So preparation is everything. I mean, and I hate to say, like, I hate to throw in as many cliches into one short thing as I can, but knowledge is power. If you can get to understand the agent, the auctioneer, as well as the marketplace and the dynamics and whatnot, you get yourself and get yourself in a really good spot. And also on top of that, learning the legislation. So for example, in Victoria, and I think this is common all through the country, highest bidder gets that right to negotiate. Right. And as a buyer, if you could put yourself in that position, you've got a vendor, you've got a seller who is at a peak emotional state in terms of their desire and motivation to sell the home. Their potential for accepting the situation and therefore being more accommodating when it comes to the negotiation side, it probably won't be as high as when it is at the auction. So understanding the nuances of the legislation so that you can potentially put yourself in the best spot, which is that right to negotiate and go one-on-one with a seller whose peak state wants to get it done. You can get yourself in some really good positions, but you've got to put the work in. It's like with anything, nothing good comes easy. And it's the same with this sort of situation. You've got to put the work in. You've got to find out how the game's played. And I don't want to say it lightheartedly. It's not, I refer to it as the game. Not in a sense of, it's obviously significant transactions in people's lives and whatnot, so we're not playing that down. But if you can look at it like a game, then you get to, your brain goes into a game playing mode where you can look to see how you can win as opposed to just how you can buy.
Exactly. It's like, how do you move the pieces on the chessboard the most strategic way? I guess so. If you're going to go in and do your research on an auctioneer, how would you go about doing that?
Most auctioneers now have some video content on YouTube.
Yeah, I've noticed a lot of live videos as well, even on their Facebook page or whichever, right?
There's a lot more live stuff going on now as well. Absolutely. Yep. There are, in each state, as far as I'm aware, there are organizations, there are definitely in Victoria, there's organizations that go around recording live auctions and they've got their own YouTube channels and what have you. So, for example, I know the Auction Reporters down here in Melbourne, they do, and I've not got a commercial relationship or anything with them. So just as a, this is a little disclaimer there, but I know that they have guys on the ground recording lives, recording pre-records, and then adding to YouTube. And they've got a real bank of auction videos from Melbourne. But then you can go onto Facebook and just do your homework on it. Like, just do Google the auctioneer, for example, and you'll see all sorts of stuff, providing that they see auctioneering as a key part of their game, as a key part of their makeup. If you do a Google of an auctioneer and you don't find anything, it means that they really have very little to no focus on the craft of auctioneering. And therefore, they're probably going to be really, really basic callers. And if that's the case, if you can't find any information on them, chances are you might have yourself an opportunity to go well. If they're very, very basic and they have one set plan, and if you deviate from the plan, then they'll go to water, which can be really, really good for buyers.
I know from Arjun and I's experience with some properties that we've purchased our portfolio, and obviously for Arjun as part of Investikit Buyers Agency, is we notice in terms of when you come in hard and strong at the outset. So say, for example, the reserve is, I don't know, we're in Sydney, so the reserve is $18 million. Let's say 1.6 mil for Sydney purposes, and you come in strong with like, because not most people want to try lowball it, I guess, from a psychological mm-hmm. point of view, because you think if I start low, then it will take me longer to get higher, right?
Yeah, it'll so run out of pop, it'll run out of steam, and, yeah. and stop short of my budget, right?
But it yeah. doesn't. It's interesting that quite often. Or not, it may not be that. But So a strategy that we tend to use is going in hard and strong at the very outset. So for example, if it was 1.6 reserve, maybe just do 100K less than that, come in 1.5 strong, and you kind of blow out the people that aren't really serious buyers at the auction. Do you have any tips like that for the buyers that, you know, you've seen some strategies that kind of win time and time again when you're a serious buyer at an auction?
Look, obviously it's budget dependent. If you've got the budget to be able to go into battle, right? One of the best strategies, and this might sound a little bit counterintuitive, but if you've got an auction that you know you've got the firepower, but you're facing a fair amount of people, a really, really good way that I've seen, and it's been done to me 3 times, and they've been really tough auctions to actually get going after that. Is they actually put a bid in either on the reserve or after the reserve.
Right.
And then shouted, and this is the critical piece, is it on the market? Right. Now, for a lot of auctioneers, they assume that people are going to start low and build it up. Right. And anything away from that tends to catch them on the hop. So the 3 auctions where I've had someone just go swinging for the fences with the very first bid, what that did, and I felt the energy each time, what that did was you could almost hear the deflation that was emanating from 5 or 6 buyers, right? That were kind of hoping that didn't, you know, they might not have the budget to go all the way, but they had the budget to give them hope. And then someone's just come in and just burst several bubbles in one go,
yeah.
right? And it almost turns into a ghost town after that first bid. And for me as the auctioneer, and like I said, feeling the energy just dissipate instantly from that crowd, really reining my energy in and slowing it right down and like almost starting it from scratch again, where I've got to start to manufacture and get the energy going back up and up and up and up and up to get people back in the game, and really reining in my bidding increments and whatnot. So it gives people every chance to just give themselves some sort of hope. Those 3 options are really difficult, really, really difficult. And now, thankfully, we managed to get the engine turning over. But I don't want to say this to sound like an arrogant person in any way, shape, or form, but I think the majority of auctioneers would have floundered and fallen, and they probably wouldn't have knocked it down and or not got very far past that, because they wouldn't have known what to do and they wouldn't have been able to feel the energy. They'd have just seen, oh, right, we're on the market. Okay. So there we are. And they'd have sold it because they've gone, right, I've done my job, sort of thing. Yeah. So they would have. They'd have thought, oh, quick paycheck this time. So yeah, that's been a tactic that's been massive. Now, if you are not as fortunate as that from a budgetary point of view, and which is the majority, like I said, understanding your auctioneer, understanding your agent is really important. Understand that an auctioneer is a human being. That one is something that a lot of people don't tend to realize. And so before the auction begins, when you go there, a really cool little tip, go and introduce yourself to the auctioneer. Say hello. Yeah. Tell him who you are. Tell them that you're excited, right? You don't have to show them your bank account, right? So I'm not telling people to give away your game, but just show some love to the auctioneer, because when the auctioneer is under pressure, they will bias towards people that they have an affinity with, if there is any affinity out there. Like that's, again, it's in their human nature when under pressure to try and find a safe space. And if you as a buyer provide some semblance of a safe space for them, then when it gets to the really, really needle point, if you need a little bit more time, they're likely to give you a little bit more time and they're likely to drag it out for you. Whereas if you're a buyer that's been an arrogant person. And I'm not sure whether I can swear on this now. I'm really trying hard not to. But if you're a buyer that's trying to be all alpha about it, right? And try and be all like, I'm the boss, you're not the boss. The auctioneer will win, right? Yeah. The auctioneer's got the power. And by will win, that could mean that they might cut their nose off to spite their face and just make sure you lose.
Yeah.
Because you've been a to win, right? So they can do that because there are a lot of egos in the auctioneering space and in the agent space, and you don't want to dent that. So it's best off that you appeal to it a little bit, right? So go say hello. And then the other thing, when you're in the auction, for me, having yourself, when it comes to that preparation piece, having yourself three clear check marks in your budget is a really cool way to go. So I refer to them as, your bargain level, your value level, and then your stretch level. And then within those three levels, you know that you can play hard. You can go for it a bit more. You can be a bit more confident when you're in between that bargain or below bargain or in between that bargain to the value level. You can be a little bit more confident. You can be a bit more stronger in your bidding. You can have it in your head and play the situation out. And then your increments can be nice and big and strong and bold and whatnot. And when you get between value and stretched, that's when you might want to look at trying to break those increments down a little bit and whatnot. Because like you said, a lot of people try and start really low, but they also try and start to break down increments possibly a little bit too early. And if you're up against an auctioneer that's worth their salt, and a lot of them might not be, but if you're up against an auctioneer that's worth anything, they'll knock back your first one or two attempts at trying to break them down. And that shows a level of weakness to other buyers if you're not careful. So you might be thinking that you're doing yourself a favor by challenging the increment of the auctioneer. But if the auctioneer doesn't yield to it, you're actually putting yourself in a worse position because you're competing buyers, and that's who you're competing with. You compete with buyers, realistically. You're not competing with the auctioneer.
No.
But if the auctioneer shows you up with a bit of a weakness, then you might be up against it a little bit. So having those three levels and then playing it out in your head, what increments you're happy to play in up until each level, then you're going to be in a really good position.
Yeah, totally agree with that. It's like, what is your best, middle, and worst case scenario? And worst case being, what's the most out of pocket that you're willing to go? And I love that tip. So you should just walk in as if you're trying to collaborate with the auctioneer.
100%.
Yeah,
do it.
That's the best approach for sure.
I could not recommend that more.
Yeah.
Because understanding that auctioneers are human beings and bearing that in mind, you're going to put yourself in a much more favorable light if you were up against three or four bidders and you need a little bit of time, or if you're the winning bidder and, you've made the effort to get to know the auctioneer a little bit and they'll think they know you a little bit. There's an affinity there. And chances are their natural bias, if they're not well educated and well practiced, their natural bias will give you a helping hand at some point during the call. So definitely go and introduce yourself to them.
Fantastic. And so with that being said, where do you feel you see buyers get it wrong the most during auctions?
It's when they try and become the boss. Trying to be the alpha in a room or in front of a house is they do it because they think they're competing against the auctioneer.
Yeah.
And they're trying to show power against the auctioneer. At the end of the day, whatever the auctioneer says is final.
Yeah.
You can try and wrestle the power all you want. It ain't going to happen. Now, some alphas will insist on doing it because they feel that if they can intimidate the auctioneer, it can force them to make a mistake and get something amiss or get something wrong or panic drop the auction or whatever, right? And I suppose you could argue that, but throwing alpha energy around, and especially when, you've got a lot of people in buying demographics these days who wouldn't say boo to a goose because of where they're from or where they're raised or whatnot, but they've got a lot more firepower than these alphas, right? So they're not intimidated. So many people, if you talk about it generationally speaking, so much of that millennial generation and set, you can alpha all you want. It ain't going to make a blind bit of difference to them, really. Yeah. Now, yes, in a pressure situation, if you're like if you're really close to them. So the only way that that works is if you're standing physically quite close to whoever you're bidding against, right? Because then they'll feel that alpha energy and they will start to get intimidated, right? But a word to the wise, if you start to do that, then people start to put restraining orders on you, which possibly isn't the best idea in the world. And trying to be an alpha from the opposite side of the crowd and you're going against the bidder that's on the other side, it ain't going to work. Because all your alpha and all your alpha energy is going towards is the auctioneer. It's just not going to fly.
No, definitely not. And so there's this term passing in, right? So passing in for the listeners is essentially when no one wins the auction, essentially, at the end of the day. So as an auctioneer, how often do you see passing ins take place at auctions there, Andy?
Every weekend. And this is the hilarious thing about passings, right? Is that the perception of a passing is, and this is like the public perception, but also within the industry to a certain extent, which is a big mistake. A lot of people see the passing as a sign of weakness. It's not, and it shouldn't be. We should not fear the passing. We shouldn't, and buyers shouldn't fear it. Vendors shouldn't necessarily fear it unless the bank's coming knocking on the door the next day, right? Which is an extenuating circumstance. But in a normal sale, the passing should just be part of a process. So whenever I talk to my vendors, one of the first things that I say is that my job as the auctioneer is to not drop the hammer. My job as the auctioneer is to test the market and to maximize the value of your asset, Mr. and Mrs. Seller. Okay. Now, whether that is under the hammer or after the event is actually irrelevant to me. It's irrelevant because for a vendor, and I've done this numerous occasions where we've purposefully passed in because the agents come in during a break, for example, and said, look, they're my buyer. They're the highest ones here. I'm just worried I've not got enough people around them to push them to where I think I can get them to. If that's the case, and that shows a real professionalism from the agent, by the way, you know, that shows a real desire to want to do well by their client, right? They're the real players in the game. Then you want to pass it in. You want to pass it in so it gives the agent a chance to get that highest buyer up to a better level in negotiation. And I say to them, look, you might not get the slam of the hammer, but you're going to be a lot happier with an extra 30 grand in your back pocket. Like, surely that will make more than compensate for the lack of thrill of it hearing me shout sold, right? Yeah. And it will. So, you know, and buyers, they need to start to understand more that just because it passes in, look, it can mean that there's a lack of interest. Of course it could, right? Yeah. Which could put you in a good spot. So let's not hide away from that one. But be careful, because what I'm seeing, and this is a massive trend in 2024 that I've seen so far, right? And it's costing buyers so much money every weekend. Big, big mistake, this. So in 2024, one big trend that I'm seeing right now is a lot more buyers coming through the doors and turning up at auctions, but so much more fence sitting. So many more buyers sitting on the fence, right? Because, and I can't blame them, because we thought that we'd had enough interest rate rises coming into the back quarter of last year. Calendar year, right? And then they stung us with one in November. So that's made a lot of buyers a little bit gun shy, because we've had interest rate pauses since then, but they're just not able to believe it until they see it. So I suspect what a lot of buyers and a lot of brokers are recommending to their buyers is, look, it's all the indicators are saying that the interest rates are going to stay where they are, if not go down from here on in, right? For a little while, which is great. But let's just make sure that that's the case with the next interest rate announcement before we go into the game, before we get stuck into buying something. So we're seeing a lot of buyers just hovering above the action without really committing. Now, the trend that's being caused as a result of that is, I've had numerous auctions, numerous, where I've had plenty of buyers in front of me and no one's saying anything. And I'll pass the auction in. And then there was one particular case in Wantirna, South Victoria, where the agent had five registered bidders. Not one of them did anything. And then immediately after we'd passed the property in, three of them came running into the house to make an offer after the event.
Interesting.
Right? And it's happening regularly where volume of passing, because in Melbourne, the clearance rate's gone down to 53-55%, right? 53.9, I think it was. And which at the coalface sounds really like a really weak market, right? But it's not telling the whole story, because immediately afterwards, that one in one Turner South, we'd passed it in at, I think it was 1.61, I think it was.
Yeah.
It sold for 1.7. Yeah. Like all three buyers saw other buyers, like, because they couldn't hide from them. Literally had to borrow, have a bedroom in for each one.
Yeah.
and they ended up costing themselves a hell of a lot more money as opposed to winning the right to negotiate, or at least throwing their name into the hat and giving themselves a shot of controlling their own destiny. If you don't bid, you're giving up a chance to take control of your own destiny a little bit, to be honest. And if one of those buyers had stuck their hand up and just won the right to negotiate from me, because I wouldn't have passed it in at that level. I'd have actually passed it in a little bit. I'd have actually passed it in to them at a slightly lower level if they'd have bothered to come in, right? So if they'd have put in an offer, if they'd have put a bid in at, say, 157, my agent, the agent would have probably been inclined to negotiate with them from that level.
Interesting.
So you've got to be so careful that just because there's no bids doesn't mean you're in a strong position. It really doesn't. And I've seen it. I've seen at least one case of that every weekend in 2024. And that is without exaggeration.
There you go. So that's quite a high percentage of passings there.
Massive percentage, but I don't care. Like, the clearance rate's a fallacy. It's a fallacy. Like, yes, it gives you a bit of a macro overview as to what's happening at the coalface on auction day, but it's, and this is where the media and the industry really, we've got to move ourselves away from holding the clearance rates as the be all and end all of the market.
Yeah.
It couldn't be further from the truth. Like, I personally, if I was as an auctioneer, if I got 0% on a weekend, but out of five auctions, for example, but all five auctions ended up getting the right amount of money, do you think I'd care? Not one bit. Couldn't care less. Because that's my job. My job is to maximize the value of the auction. It's not to just slam the hammer and run off to my next one. It's not my job. It shouldn't be an agent's job. It shouldn't be an auctioneer's job. An auctioneer's job is to test the market to the fullest of its extent. And so, and this is, it's a real big challenge that the real estate space has as an industry, not as a consumer base, but as an industry. A lack of a third stage of a process, generally speaking, costs sellers, let alone agents, so much money. And the first stage is marketing, second stage is the auction, but the third stage is after the event. Like, for example, I know that Ray White put out their statistics of volume of auctions, volume auction campaigns that sell within 6 weeks, so 4 weeks of the auction, and then 2 weeks afterwards. And the success rate for that six-week period of auction plus 2 weeks is, it's like double the success rate of a standard private sale campaign for the same amount of time.
There you go.
So this pass-in thing, buyers have got to be real careful because it doesn't give you the advantage.
It's not a true indication of, because the perception is the auction is a live update of what the market is for that, you know, the interest in that property, but it doesn't seem that's the case.
It's not true.
Yeah.
It's not true. It's not a true indicator. And to show how much stupid it is that we as an industry hang our hats on it as much as we do, all you got to do is look at the reporting bodies for it, right? CoreLogic, REA, Domain, the relevant institute for your state. Have a look at all the clearance rates. They'll all be different.
Yeah.
So why on earth are we as an industry and as a consumer base hanging our hat and our decision-making on a figure that statistics can't even work out what's right and what's wrong? Because the way that they're reported is just so, it's so incoherent with how the industry plays out. Like, and it's not consistent. So you've got one body that will include withdrawals. You've got another body that will not include withdrawals. And you look at the bottom of, so say, for example, you go on realestate.com, and you look at the clearance rate for Sydney, for example, and it will say 70-odd percent or whatever it is, based on 800 and something set reported sales. But then it will say a little thing at the bottom that says 400 haven't been reported yet. Basically, this is 800 of 1200 auctions that were scheduled to go ahead. That's a third of your data not even accounted for.
Yeah.
It just, and this is my big advice for buyers, is stop looking at the macro and play each situation as it is on the day, one-on-one, in each individual situation, because not only are the statistics just completely, they're just a false dawn and they lead people down the garden path in most respects. As well as that, the human dynamics of each individual situation is very different. So you go to option A, and it might just be a homeowner that wants to sell, hasn't got any desperate need to sell, hasn't got any pressure to sell, but wants to sell because they fancy doing some other stuff. You go to option B, where it's mortgage time, or it's we need to move because the wife's got a job somewhere else or whatever, right? Those human dynamics play a huge part in the outcome of each option as well. So buyers need to quit looking at this macro and looking at the news and saying and seeing the news as the path to glory for them. And they need to get more micro in their home, more micro in their understanding of what's going on per situation. Because more often than not, you see buyers that just think, oh, the clearance rates are really down, therefore I can play hardball. And then they end up costing themselves more after the event anyway.
Exactly right. Well, those are some really handy tips, Andy. I guess to summarize that. So collaboration is definitely something, you know, collaborate with the auctioneer that's running the auction is a big one. Don't try to compete with the auctioneer. Number two, know your best, middle and worst case, I guess, budget in terms of what you're going to be comfortable with before you walk into that auction. And number three, I guess what we're talking about is clearance rates isn't the be all end all. You know, there's a lot of negotiations happening straight after auctions taken place. This actually happened for myself and Arjun very recently with the sale of one of our properties in Glenwood, which had a pass in. So we've seen it ourselves as well. And yeah, so walk in knowing that if just because there is no bids taking place on the day, there may well be some negotiations happening straight after.
Absolutely. Well, and just to finish on that, just because you might be one of, say, two unconditional bidders, but there's going to be a peloton of bidders subject to finance coming down the track. And if you don't take advantage of that little head start, you're going to be thrown into the pack. And then it's a free-for-all after that. And your unconditional element to your contract, yes, it will carry some clout from a negotiation point of view. But if you allow the door to remain open for those subject to finance buyers to come through, they know they need to put up good numbers in order to be considered.
Yes, that's a really good point.
And it only takes a seller to go to see your unconditional offer at 1.5, for example, and a conditional offer, a subject to finance offer at 1.6, and the vendor's going to go, screw that, I'm going to take the punt for 100 grand.
Yeah. So, and that's a really good point there, because from a finance point of view, I mentioned the whole auction scene as a live market, so to speak. 9 times out of 10, your valuation is going to come back as what the property was purchased at auction. Whereas if you're going and making slightly highball offers after the fact, you may be doing over offers, for example, and you may have a shortfall in your valuation as well.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But the ones that are unconditional, they need to take advantage of the situation that's in front of them. Don't let it play out too long, because you're just going to end up disadvantaging yourself.
Exactly. Well, thank you so much for tuning in today's episode of the Property Nerds podcast. And again, a huge thank you to our wonderful guest, Andy Reed, for sharing his insights and experiences with us today. And yeah, it's been truly enlightening to dive deep into the world of property buying at auctions through your expert auctioneer lens. If you enjoyed our conversation today and want to learn more, remember to subscribe to our fortnightly podcast through your favorite podcast platform, Spotify, Apple, and so on, so you never miss an episode. So we do love hearing from our listeners. So if you do have any questions, comments, or topics you would like us to explore, please reach out to us through our social media channels or on our websites, which are investorkit.com.au for all things property investing or hillsfinance.com.au. For all things finance. And Andy, where can they reach out to you?
andyreed.com.au. As simple as that. Or you can find me on Instagram. I'm one of the easier guys to find in the industry, let's be honest. So yeah, if you just do a search for andyreed.com.au and there you'll find me and all my stuff.
Amazing. So until next time, keep crunching those numbers and stay nerdy, our property enthusiasts. And this is Lee Paluel, your co-host of the Property Nerds podcast. Goodbye for now.
The information featured in this podcast is general in nature and does not take into consideration your financial situation or individual needs and should not be relied upon. Before making any investment, insurance, tax, property, or financial planning decision, you should consult a licensed professional who can advise whether your decision is appropriate for you. Guests appearing on this podcast may have a commercial relationship with the companies mentioned.
Game over.